Brainstorm Brewery is sponsored by mtgprice.com. Track your whole collection and its value for free at mtgprice.com. Everyone, to another special episode of Brainstorm Nursery. Oh, wait, sorry. Brainstorm Brewery. The podcast that will help you afford magic. Because you need to learn how to afford magic because this is an expensive game out here. My name is Marcel MTG, and I have the feeling that this game is too expensive, but not my co-hosts. They all feel that if you cannot afford this game, it's all right. You can play with Draft Commons and M Commons. And if you need to get your draft rares, listen to us and we'll help you afford a cheaper game. But if you can't, that's too bad. This is an elitist game and you don't deserve to play it. So what do you guys say about that?
So are you going to do the real intro now?
No, that was stunningly accurate.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, the high levels of the game. I mean, it's the same thing with anything, right? Like, anyone who devotes themselves so much to get to the top tier of something is going to be kind of elitist about it.
Hey, guys, I hear that it's really expensive to go play golf, and I think that golf clubs and golf courses cost a lot of money, and it should just be cheaper for everybody, okay?
Why can't they be free? Why can't they just reprint golf balls until they're cheaper?
Well, I mean, look at something like even video gaming. Like, you can go play, like, League of Legends on a laptop, or you can go and buy a high power gaming computer and it's going to be that much better because you know.
Yeah, man, I don't think $100 gaming mice and $300 gaming keyboards exist. You should only be able to, everyone should have access to those. They should reprint those until they cost $5 each. If every gaming mouse was $1, we could all have them all.
I love it. You guys just fit right into the tee. Perfectly good. So moving on to other stuff, because we obviously don't want to rehash this old conversation that's never going to go anywhere fast. You guys want to talk about some magic stuff? I heard you guys were at Atlanta. How was that going for you guys?
Well, it was very busy for both of us.
Great. Yeah, I kind of had a blur of a weekend.
Star City event. Ryan wasn't even supposed to work, but the booth was so busy that he got pulled in to help out with them for the weekend. And I got to cover the limited format, which was a great event. We had the Owen Turnwald Tom Martell finals, and Tom Martell sort of showed all the haters they were wrong to an extent. They're not really wrong. But he showed that green is not as unplayable as people think because he won the Grand Prix, the top eight draft, with a green deck. So, I mean, the data still says that green is the worst color, but it is certainly able to win drafts.
Well, if everyone else is avoiding green, obviously that green is probably going to be the right pick.
Right. And the thing is, in this situation, in this format, some people have gone so far to say it doesn't matter if you're the only green player at the table. You don't want to play it. But obviously, you know, it may be a little hyperbole going on there. But yeah, it was a good weekend. I know this was a long stretch of events for you, right, Ryan?
Yeah, this is 5 out of 6 weekends now. And I've got one more locally here next weekend, and then I'm done for the season. It's going to be great.
I know exactly what you mean. I got done with my busy season, and oh man, the light at the end of the tunnel is so sweet. So sweet, man.
Oh yeah, like the 12-hour ride home was so bittersweet because like I had to be in a car for 14 hours nearly yesterday, including stops. But as we got closer and like I saw the sign for Lansing and I was just like, oh my goodness, so excited.
But he's never driven a single second of that 12 hours, so that helped.
It's true. It's very true.
Were you there, Jason?
But I mean,
I just know, man. I know he didn't drive.
He doesn't go to GPs in his own state.
Yeah, why would I go to a GP and get murdered?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
derailed.
Jason is the type of person that will die from a paper cut, so he doesn't want to play magic cards or touch magic cards, because on the off chance that he does cut himself with a paper cut, he'll just fold over and die on us, so do what you can. Please avoid giving Jason any chance to get a paper cut, everyone out there.
Paper cuts are dangerous.
Yeah, they hurt. Have you had one recently as an adult?
No. I don't think so, but I imagine it hurts.
Yeah, I haven't had one either. I wonder why.
I don't know. My fingers are not calloused enough. I don't usually doesn't usually cut all the way through. Luckily,
so. I get finger I get paper cuts on my fingers all the time from stacking that Skrilla. You guys should try it sometime.
I think I remember this. This is probably the third time I heard that joke.
No.
So Marcel, why is your busy season over? What sort of constitutes a busy season for you?
My busy season is basically, I got two busy seasons now, which is a beautiful thing. September through right now, which is the middle of November. And basically, I'll be lucky to get a week off within that entire period of days off. And it's just, you know, there's a lot of work going on. There's a lot of conventions that come into town. This is the season for conventions all around. I do a lot of work on those. And, yeah, it's just brutal hours, nonstop going. It's not demoralizing or nothing. Pays well and it's good work, but man, as far as creativity or trying to do other things, like there's so much shit that's been put on hold that I've been trying to do that it's going to take me like 2 days to decompress to get my mind back together and get on a path to be more productive, try to get this streaming going and, play some more magic. I got to get some magic in. So, you know, I'm starting to get the itch or I do got the itch and just trying to, I'm looking forward to 2 weeks off and then I'll have like another three weeks of work after that in December and, you know, start the new year again. But it's brutal. I love it. It's great. But I can't wait to play some magic. This Abzan deck, though, has been treating me well.
Gross. You're the enemy playing Siege Rhinos like that.
Oh, did we update people? We got to play, me and Corbin.
Yeah, I guess this was last week. I streamed it. We battled some standard. Marcel was soundly defeated.
Soundly. He was playing green-black Eldrazi, and Abzan just... I don't think it's fast enough to beat the deck, and it just goes over the top of Abzan, so it's a pretty difficult matchup. And goodness, that was a Sanctum of Ugin, and then chaining in Ulamogs, like, it's just oppressive. It's just so just nasty.
Yeah, now that red has become less and less of the format as it's gone on, the Eldrazi deck's gotten better and better, and you've seen sort of the percentages rise on it, and we saw Ugin's price rise as well. As a result of that. And I think that the green-black versions are the best. I think that Catacomb Sifter is a really good card in the deck. Not only does it ramp you, you know, with the Eldrazi token makes, it's a good blocker. It puts two bodies on the field to protect an Ugin or something. And the Scry ability is super relevant when, you know, you're late in the game, and if you don't have just the chain of Ulamogs going like you want, you can just sacrifice that Scion at the end of a turn to get a free Scry and kind of control your draw step when you're looking for something in particular. So I actually think it's the best iteration of the Eldrazi ramp deck by far. And I think it's only going to get better as the next set comes out, because I'm sure we're going to have, you know, more Eldrazi and more ramp tools.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing more from this deck. I mean, I think it fits well. I've seen other decks beat it. But what's interesting is I was able to see the Catacomb Sifter, was this four color rally deck. Got to see a taste of that playing it online, and that looks pretty fun. Didn't that take down
It did not win Brussels. Three of those decks top aided, though. It was actually Esper Dragons that won the event. But yes, three of them top aided. So that's 100% a real part of the metagame that people have to be prepared to deal with. I will say this, if you want to play that deck yourself, and you know, there's nothing wrong with it, if you do, like, it's certainly understandable, it's a really good deck, practice it a lot. That deck has a lot of triggers, both ETBs and on-death triggers, a lot of things you have to stack, a lot of mechanical actions, and you have to be very careful to not draw in tournament play with it, because it can just create such long turns and big board states with Rally. So if you're going to play that deck, learn it very well before you try to go to a big tournament with it.
Didn't somebody try to pilot that and ended up being pie in their face? That's what I heard.
I mean, I'm sure it's happened. I don't know what case in particular you'd be referring to, but it certainly is a deck that I've seen very good players make a lot of mistakes with, just because they're going late or they're newer to it, or you know, sort of all of these different reasons. that make the deck tough to play. But the power level was very high.
Yeah, very fun. There's a lot of synergy. And was that Grim Heripooks, or how you say it?
Heraspex.
Man, that card is such a powerhouse in that deck. That and the Catacomb Sifter. Catacomb Sifter has proven to be quite a good card. It's an uncommon, but that is the green-black one for 2/3. And whenever a creature dies that you control, scry one, and then you get a Drazi Scion. So you get a total of 5/4 for 3, which is actually pretty decent there. And then the ability of the Scion to sacrifice at will gives you a lot of play with the Cutthroat. And the Cutthroat obviously being like Blood Artist? Very powerful, can take over the games, and the ability to sacrifice at will with like Nantuckle Husk or such is good. And I've seen that they use Jace in that version, or?
Maybe some versions do. Most of them don't.
Yeah, I played against a version with Jace. Jace was OP in it.
Jace is pretty good in general. But yeah, I mean, that's what we're doing. What are you on in Standard, Ryan?
I mean, I haven't been able to play a ton over the past couple of weeks, but last I was on Temir, still on like Kolaghan Red too. So it's just kind of Atarka Red, but you're running Kolaghan's Command and Mardu Skull Hunter. It's probably not as good right now, but it's good against the Eldrazi decks and stuff. You just kind of tear apart their hand. I haven't been able to play for like the past 2 weeks though, so I'm kind of outdated at the moment.
Well, let's talk about Modern Grand Prix Pittsburgh next weekend. Well, I guess by next weekend, I mean, starts today when this podcast comes out. But I'll be there covering it. I'm really looking forward to it. First Modern Grand Prix since Battle for Zendikar came out. So we'll see, you know, what sort of developments we have. And if you remember right, the last Modern Grand Prix that I worked, at least Oklahoma City, like 2 months ago, Lantern Control won. And that was our last North American Modern Grand Prix. So definitely interested to see what the metagame looks like this time around. I've seen a lot of people talking about Amulet Bloom and how Amulet Bloom is not only the best deck, it's the deck you should play if you want to play it because it's going to get banned. I don't think it's there, but there's been a lot of talk about Amulet Bloom and sort of by extension Blood Moon in Modern over the past couple weeks.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of talk about Blood Moon and people wanting it to be banned. There was that pretty good article by Saffron Olive about, you know, the good, bad, and the ugly as far as, like, hate cards. And he considered Blood Moon to be a good hate card. I'm not necessarily on that side of the fence. What do you guys feel about Blood Moon in Modern? And
well, what do you think,
Marcel? I feel like
you don't like it as a card, or you...
I think it's... I don't like it how it plays out, and because it just completely hoses some decks. Yeah, it's greedy decks to play along on basics, but it just seems so oppressive.
There's not enough decks that it's just kind of good against. It's not a card that you really want. I don't know. There are times when I feel like main decking Blood Moon is great. I don't necessarily feel like that right now because the decks that it's bad against is really bad against, and those are typically like your bad matchups anyway. And so you're just sinking yourself even further, whereas in the matchups where it's good, like the decks that can usually play Blood Moon are already like have a reasonable game one. So I like it in the sideboard, but I don't know that I like it as a 4-up right now either.
Right. For sure. I mean, Marcel, is your issue with it, you know, when you say it's oppressive, are you talking about it's oppressive to, like, let's say Jund or Grixis, you know, just three-color decks?
Three-color decks or, you know, even, like, say Twin. Well, Twin does play some red, but it's like once it gets out, like, is... If you can't interact with the enchantment, you know, black decks can't do so. Blue decks have a very difficult time.
I mean, this is Twin plays Blood Moon. Is that that's what you're saying? Because they
Twin's not completely shut out by Blood Moon. I mean, it still has access to red, so it can play some cards. It's not like it just completely shuts down everything they do.
Well, Twin literally plays Blood Moon itself.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a good card.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're saying they're shut. You're saying, like, talking about it shutting them down. I mean, they play it themselves, so it obviously doesn't shut them down. You just have to fetch correctly. I think this is sort of the camp that people fall into. I'm of the opinion that, like, as a design, I don't love Blood Moon. I think that it can be played around sometimes, but there's a lot of games where if you just have, like, a shock land and a colonnade or something, if you're playing a blue X deck, and then they play turn 3 Blood Moon, and then you draw your fetch land. You literally can't play that game. you know, and that's bad, I think. So the downside of Blood Moon as a design is very oppressive and very unhealthy. But at the same time, when decks like Tron and Scapeshift and Amulet Bloom exist in Modern, you cannot ban Blood Moon ever. Like, those decks would be absurdly good if Blood Moon was not legal. If you want to ban Summer Bloom and you want to ban Urza's Mine, then sure, go ahead and ban Blood Moon and Choke, because they're sort of this land hate that Wizards doesn't consider healthy. But I think with the Modern format as is, you absolutely cannot remove Blood Moon. It's a necessary evil.
Could be. I have not played enough Modern to actually have a good enough opinion about that. So there you go. Maybe we shouldn't have gone this far deep on the Blood Moon topic. But what about Modern in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So, but going on back to Pittsburgh, So I think we're going to see a lot of Blood Moon and a lot of Amulet Bloom. And we'll see when the next set comes around if anything's done about Amulet Bloom. The reason people, I think, are talking about it a lot is because the next Pro Tour Oath of the Gatewatch in February, I believe, in Atlanta, is Modern. And this will be their last opportunity to ban something before that Pro Tour. And that's not necessarily uncommon for Wizards to ban cards before a Pro Tour so that the format is fresh. I think the format is healthy enough that no banning is needed. But I, if something were to go, I would suspect it would be Summer Bloom, because that's the card that most breaks the rules of Magic. So we'll see. Sort of to be determined. I mean, on that note, though, just talking about Modern in general, look at what does well this weekend, and look at, we've seen the prices of some things like Abrupt Decay and some of these similar cards really tail off since Modern season ended last year. And the Pro Tour will sort of reignite interest in those things. And I think I don't know if we'll see rises out like as an index, you know. Obviously, if a particular deck or something does well, we'll see cards rise. But talking about something like Abrupt Decay, which has gone like $3 or $4 off of its peak, but is sort of a known quantity in Modern, I'm interested to see if the price decay sort of stops with the Pro Tour or if it continues, because I know that it will rebound. I'm very confident it'll rebound next Modern season, next year. So financially, the question is, do you pick things up ahead of the Pro Tour or sort of wait? So I'm of the opinion that the next 2 months, 3 months, standard prices aren't moving anywhere right now. They're just going down or, you know, stagnating. I think that now is the time to pick up those Modern staples. So just keep an eye on what does well at the Grand Prix this weekend. All right, what do we want to do next? Goldfish stuff?
Talk about something I give a shit about.
Commander. New Commander sets out. And Commander Weekend. How do we think Commander Weekend went off for Star City?
I think they'll shit on it and stop supporting it like they do everything else I like.
Okay.
That was
constructive.
That's where Jason's at this week.
Fuck Star City.
I guess I have to concede one to Jason. Oh, and then I have to concede one to Corbin, too. I'm building my girlfriend a Commander deck because that's the easiest way, I think, to teach her. Unfortunately, because she wants to be able to play something competitive, but like, I don't want to build her a standard deck.
Why don't you fire a
precon? Commander's where it's at.
The precons were sweet.
The Commander precons are really good.
Yeah, Star City did their big weekend last weekend. I thought it seemed pretty cool. MJ Scott was doing the cosplay right there, and they had Sheldon, they had Benny Smith. They had a bunch of people out there playing Commander. It seemed like people were having a good time with it. And a lot of I liked what they did. It was, hey, it's not just this Grand Prix this weekend. This is also the release of the Commander sets. So I like.
Yeah, they did a good job supporting it.
Yeah, they gave something to that, you know, that person, that part of the tournament. So it wasn't just, it is sort of that whole becoming a convention thing that we've talked about in the past. There was a lot going on last weekend in Atlanta that was not just the main event. And the Commander thing was just, and the Commander thing was a big part of it. People were having a lot of fun. So new decks seem sweet.
They're very good. They're very balanced. They're balanced financially. They're balanced power-wise. Like, as much as I don't want to see these every year, just because it's the pace of reprints and the pace of them introducing new mechanics that aren't tested out very well and releasing new cards that aren't designed very well, they did a pretty good job balancing everything. So they're going to fart these out every year. They could be worse, definitely. So I really like how balanced they are. And I think they're four or five really solid commanders out of the like the 10 they've introduced. So I'm really excited. I got to build Daxos and Azuri like immediately. I think a lot of people agree with that. People are already looking for ways to break Mizzix, because anything that makes your spells cheaper is just going to be stupid. You probably play some sort of like storm deck, I would think, you know, with really expensive stuff. You can make stuff with buyback absurdly cheap, etc. So I really like Inexorable Tide in a deck like that. So I'm pretty excited about the pre-cons and where commanders headed in general. Haven't heard anything about updates to the banner restricted list. So the next cycle we could get nothing, which would be cool. I don't think anything needs banned or unbanned yet. So state of EDH is pretty good. We got all the prices for all the Commander 2015 cards up on MTG Price, and I'm just looking at how stuff is trending, and it's some of it's pretty crazy. Like Blade of Selves was like $1 on Saturday when I wrote my article, and by the time Monday rolled around, it was sold out at $6. So that it's pretty clear that people that like Commander singles don't go to StarCity.com. So a lot of their pre-sale prices were pretty arbitrary and just ended up being super wrong. But some of them ended up being pretty accurate. I was surprised the blue, what the fuck is it called?
The choose three.
Yeah, what's that called? I don't know. I don't have the decks yet. Mystic Confluence. I was surprised that was the most expensive one from the cycle, considering how, you know, the green one's a little bit overpowered and how everybody was excited about the red one in non-EDH formats, which I don't think is going to emerge. So you're not going to play that in Legacy. But Mystic Confluence, the blue one, is the most expensive card in the set right now. It's worth even more than Eldrazi Monument, which is pretty cool. So there's no like $30 card, which means they're not going to sell the decks unevenly like they have in the past. So I think they've given up on trying to print a Legacy card in these.
Well, yeah, good. I think if they print exciting stuff like Blade of Selves, which has between like $6 and $7 today, I think that's way better than like, hey, we're going to design a card we think is power level worthy of Legacy. It just opens a lot of problems and doesn't. I guess the idea maybe is that you make the set appealing to a different crowd than just your new Commander players or whatever. But it's just overall, I think, sort of a misstep.
There were missteps even when they try to do that, because the fact that they made a Judge promo dual caster mage said to me that they thought that was going to be the card, and it ended up being Containment Priest. Nobody gave a shit about Dual Caster Mage, and it's like $3 right now. So, like, all the value from that deck is soaked up by Wyrmcoil and Solemn Simulacrum. You know, so it's interesting, like, how even when they think they've got a slam dunk Legacy card, they end up totally whiffing.
Yeah, I mean, that's possible. Or they just, I mean, I could see that just being, hey, judges are Commander players a lot of the time, so maybe they'll want this. I think that card's sweet.
It's not great in Commander.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. It's not super exciting ever.
That's what we wanted a judge foil of.
Right. Yeah, so I don't know. We'll see. But I like what they have. And talking about the pre-sale prices, I think if there's anything that's hard to predict a pre-sale price for, it's Commander cards.
Because the only way to get them is in pre-cons, where you know exactly how many copies of each card you're getting. So, like, the economics that we talk about vaguely for sets were like, oh, well, you know, the complete set price from Modo Redemption is going to enforce the total cost of the set. But the total cost of the set for EDH is known right out of the gate. So it's really interesting. to see how much the reprints are going to rebound based on newer cards failing to soak up enough of the value. And they're like five micro economies within the set. It's all really interesting from a financial standpoint.
Yeah, for sure. Well, speaking of, you know, figuring things out, solving things, best segue ever right there. Marcel, do you want to talk about, I know you wanted to get to this, MTG Goldfish was asked by Wizards of the Coast to stop publishing their constructed breakdown of results from Magic.
So yeah, MTG Goldfish was told by Wizards that to take down their matchup results or percentages, which, and that's the only thing that they're asked to take down, which is basically, say Abzan is like 55% against Jeskai Black. And those percentages are what they didn't want to have out there, that information, matchup results. And this is a policy, I believe Wizards just wants to control the flow of information and doesn't want the meta to get solved. That's what happened here. They did it before with the Magic Online. They used to have post the daily. The daily is basically from all the events. And then from there, people could compile data. And they ended up doing just one daily event per day, or a couple, I believe, as they moved on to now. So there's a lot less information. They wanted to control that. Part of the reason is they said they didn't want the format to be solved. I believe this was during the time of mono black control and mono blue control. And they felt that it got solved too fast. I think that's partially due to the cards that were created. So I don't think necessarily that's the case, but they, you know, they felt that way with MTG Goldfish, and they just asked them to do it politely. It wasn't in demand. It wasn't nothing threatening. They just asked them to do so. And, you know, MTG Goldfish being wanting to play along, obviously abided by it. And
so I think you said you were not super thrilled with it, Marcel. What is your issue here?
I'm not thrilled. It's the control of information, the way that they're doing like that. I don't know if the actions are going to result in what they're hoping for. And it seems a little heavy handed, but if they really find out that such data is creating a faster meta to solve, then I think it's healthier for the game. What we wanted to have is health for the game. So, I mean, if it's really benefiting Magic by not having that information out there, then I think that is a correct move. So it really just depends on the reasoning and if the reasoning is sound judgment.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of arguments against it. And one of the ones that I want to address is that people are like, oh, but pro players all have access to this information, because now you're just taking it away from the common players and you're just leaving it to the big stores and their teams. What people are sort of missing is that information is only truly relevant to pros before the Pro Tour. And before the Pro Tour, there is no Magic Online breakdown to scientifically solve.
I disagree. I mean, there's GPs, right? Pros with GPs. So obviously that data is valuable for pros post-Pro Tour.
The EV of a GP compared to a Pro Tour, when you're talking about minimal percentages with a deck, like, nobody's winning a Grand Prix because they found out that Obzon has a 55% win rate against this deck rather than the 50% their testing showed.
I disagree. Like, I mean, it's all about margins. It's all about margins. And if you can give you that extra 2% by playing this deck because you realize that this deck is stronger and people have done the data for you and you don't have to put in that hard work to come up with the results on your own, like, there's no way that you would not benefit from that information. Like, that's to say that pros wouldn't do it, that the EV is not there. Winning the GP is high EV. You can't say that not winning the GP is bad for any pro. That's going to add to your possibility.
All of the data says that green is by far the worst color in Battle for Zendikar and is undraftable. And then Tom Martell won the Grand Prix with a green deck. So, I mean, how did that information, that number crunching work out for him?
You cannot use that as a reason to say that the data doesn't work. That's an outlier case. It worked for him. He's a high level pro. He made it work for him. To say because he got away with that, or he did that, not to say he got away with that, but he actually did that to success, and that invalidates the other data, is just, I think, ludicrous. Honestly.
I'm also telling you that players, pro players, don't. This isn't this. Oh, we show up and I have all of this data breaking everything down, and I want that last 3%. They play what they want to play a lot of the time. Patrick Chapin showed up in Oklahoma City with a deck nobody had seen before because he wanted to show people how good Abbot of Carol Keep was. Do you think he got that from breaking down data?
Again, now you're talking about a corner case. You just said right now he wanted to show how good this card was. So obviously he's invested in the card, and he's not worried about the extra. He's now invested the card, the deck. So him playing the best deck is less of an interest to him. The EV on playing that deck is higher to him, and that's an individual case. I mean,
I guess that's why they all play different. That's why they all show up with the same deck, right?
I'm just saying the information you're saying the information is not valuable and cannot be used, I think, is dumb.
I'm saying that it's
I think how much it impacts is changes per person. Some people are math driven. That's what they want. So they're going to go after those edges. Some people will want to play the decks that they want. Some people may want to play this deck, and then they look at the data like, you know what? It's actually probably not a good idea. I'll play this other deck that I enjoy. You don't really know what those decisions are that they're making.
But the point is, pros want to win, and they're paying money to go to these things. They want to win money. They want pro points. If it were truly such an advantage, they'd all be playing the same quote-unquote best deck, but they're not.
Okay.
Like, we'll look this weekend. Modern is the format more than any other where that data would come in useful. And we'll see, like, if all the pros show up on Amulet Bloom, because that's what the talk has been. If every single one of them or 90% of them show up on Amulet Bloom, then yeah, maybe there's some benefit to that data. Maybe you could make an argument there. But when they all show up playing what they're comfortable playing or used to playing, it doesn't give such a big advantage that these people who are driven only by the EV of things are giving into it. You know, like the time it is most useful and could very much be put to advantage is before a pro tour. Grand Prix are such crapshoots about what you're going to play on the first day that information is just very little relevancy.
Okay.
I understand that. No, but see, I guess I understand why people are upset about it. And that's what I wanted to address. But at the same time, Wizards nicely asked them to take it down. Maybe Wizards should update their terms of service for Magic Online that says you're not allowed to use bots to spectate thousands of games at a time because that wears down our servers and creates this unequal flow of information.
They didn't have to. They don't have to create a policy if they didn't say that, you know, if it became like, no, we're not going to do that. Then all of a sudden you would probably see a change in the terms of service, you know.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, but like, If people are concerned about pros having access to this information, maybe that's the solution, is they update the terms of service.
Yeah, obviously leaves a gap open for anybody that's the entrepreneur that could do the similar service. They can extract such data and provide it to whoever, in pros, common players, whatever, and may not be MTG Goldfish. They could be, you know, whatever they want to be, and they could extract data the same way. And if people find that, you know, data valuable, they could sell it. So then, I mean, if it is valuable, someone will do that. So it's just a matter of how valuable that
is. Right. If it was valuable, somebody would have already done it.
Well, it was being done by Goldfish. Goldfish did it probably the best. So why there was no need for someone to try to replicate what is already, you know, if someone's doing it at peak, you know, you're fighting an uphill battle.
I guess.
I'm surprised this didn't happen sooner, because this was something they used to self-publish and they kind of stopped doing.
Yeah.
So I really thought that this was going to be something they cracked down on sooner if they're going to at all.
I very much support the goal of don't have the metagame solved too fast through science. You know, I think the Magic community is very smart, and I don't care what cards you design. You cannot design a card game with these few cards where millions of people playing probably billions of games over the course of 2 months aren't going to figure it out.
Yeah. But
so anything that slows that down, where people, like, instead of at least making people spend a month to play that many games, they get to do it in a week because they get to look at Magic Online and scrape the results. I think it's not needed. It removes a lot of the sort of mystery from the game. And I mean, obviously it's a business driven decision because people get tired of it. People get tired of a format full of siege rhinos, and that sort of thing exists because this data is being published and put out there, and then it infects the hive mind of Magic, where it's like, oh, well, this is the best deck by 3 percentage points. I better play it on Magic Online all the time, and it's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. So I think that people complain
that they want the format to stay fresh, and they don't want it to all be CG renders. They should be applauding the move to slow down sort of the scientific deduction of information and leave it to be found more organically. So I think that this is you know, a positive move in that aspect.
Boy, you sound like a company man.
Man.
But Company man Corbin supporting their decisions.
I mean, I don't want the format to be solved a weekend either. And as somebody who cares about Magic Finance, you shouldn't either.
I mean, I agree with you, but for the format to be solved means there's a clear and defined best deck, and then the other decks have worked around that. If you got a healthy metagame and you got decks that have, you know, percentages of 55 to 45, 40 to 60, but it's all relatively within the same range and it's a relatively flat curve, the decks will evolve naturally. And then that's how you do it. You create a healthy format where people are able to balance. There's an ebb and flow. And even if people does have this data, it doesn't necessarily make anything oppressive, and people could just play what they want to.
Well, I would say that this format has evolved naturally. Red's fallen off. Dark Jeskai is super beatable. The Esper Tokens deck sort of came up to beat it. The Eldrazi decks have been much more played because it's good against Ops and stuff like that. It has evolved. But you said it. You want it to evolve naturally. And that's not scraping a million games on Magic Online in a week while bogging down the servers with your bots. You know, like that's the opposite of naturally.
Not necessarily. You know, I mean, because you got to understand that the age that we live in is a data-driven processing. We have access to these tools that are able to do such. So it's like saying, yeah, you know, I could go about it, do this long division and come up with the answer. Or I could use my calculator. And it's like, if you have the tools and the tools are there and you're able to utilize it, that's what technology is for. It's advancing you as a human being. So it's there. The game changes. The game evolves. If like they can't suppress this data forever, like someone's going to find a way. If people need to get this information, is that valuable? There's a will. There's going
to
be a way.
I mean, to be fair, they can suppress it by changing the terms of service.
Yeah,
but right now
there's
trying all to
work around. People could work.
They're trying not to be heavy-handed.
And even they do the terms of service, there'll still be another way to find data. Like people compile the data of any types and run it through spreadsheets. It's the nature of how society has evolved. So I mean.
I understand. I'm not arguing any of that. I just think that as a player, you should be happy that the format is sort of being gently nudged to evolve naturally rather than number crunched in a week. You know,
I agree.
If I'm looking at anything like it from a financial perspective or anything like that, yeah, I want those percentages. I get it. But I'm speaking, you know, like as a player who likes the evolution the Magic goes through. Yeah. All right. So there's more Magic Online stuff to talk about this week. They're adding more leagues. There's a Pauper League coming out. We have Legendary Cube on there. They're actually eliminating Pauper 8-mans. Sort of seems like this continuation of the removal of these downtime between events, and they want on-demand play, which is one of the things, of course, that people have always blasted Magic Online for compared to other games on the market. So I think we can definitely see where they're coming from with these changes.
Well, I got to play leagues. I finally played the league for the first time this past week. Finished out a blue-black one that I played my first game like a couple or a month ago. And then I finished that out and then played with Abzan. And I guess there's a league season, so the league is closed right now. Or is closing. You got to finish up your games. And it seems just a little odd. I don't know. I think they're still working on the leagues, but leagues is by far the best way to play. Just the downtime, removing that downtime is so positive for the play experience. I thank you, Wizards, for doing that much, but there's obviously more to be worked on.
Yeah, well, I'll give you one that you'll probably want them to work on. The Magic Online Championship Series went through giant changes this week, where now, rather than the old system, I guess you got qualifying points, you played anything at the end of the month, it was either limited or constructed, blah, 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 you'd have a chance to get into the months, and that was a big deal. They're now changing it up where there some of the positive changes before we get into the negative are that you now just basically get a qualifying token and you can use that token within a time period. So you don't have to be there on this particular date like you did in the past. So it gives more flexibility. And the other change they're making, and this is the controversial one, is that they're giving all platinum level pros sort of a free buy into the playoffs level of the mocks I'm not an expert on how their bracket and everything breaks down, but I know that Platinum players are sort of not having to do the work to get there on Magic Online. I think the reasoning for it is that Wizards wants their Magic Online to be more, a little more of a face of a game, or just to get a little more exposure. And Platinum pros have obviously put a lot of work into Magic, and they feel like that they, by virtue of earning Platinum, have earned their right to be there. And they want them to play on Magic Online. You have, you know, your best players playing the game online. That's obviously a good PR move. And I think that's sort of what they're going for. The flip side of it, of course, is that a lot, it makes it much, much harder for the typical Magic Online grinder to, you know, try to hit it big, because they're just going to have to go up against a field of Platinum pros every 3 months or whatever when the tournament comes around.
Yeah, I mean, the way they could negate this is they have a decent GP or something at the same time, so people have to make the choice and may not play in the MOX event. I mean, but the numbers are probably going to be great because it's going to be such a small field. And then again, yeah, they're playing against those random grinders. So, I mean, I can understand people's outrage. I think this is something that we have to see what happens if all of a sudden that is a steamroll by Platinum Pros, then I don't think that is the right decision. I feel like if you're going to play a MOX, put the time and effort in, you know, go for it. Because, I mean, the Magic Online is being supported by all the Jobins, the Dirtles, and everything else out there. And if all of a sudden you take away their opportunity to get to the Pro Tour because you just overload with pros, that just does seems like bad, just all around.
Maybe. I mean, do you have to balance, like, as a company, they have to balance that against the increased exposure the program gets because the pros are playing it.
That's exactly that's a decision they have to make. And I mean, we have to see how it plays, but I don't think necessarily steamrolling your Magic Online players. I don't know. Is it steamrolling? I mean, I just don't know, but it just, yeah, I see that has the potential of just having a bad feel and a bad
vibe. Yeah. I think that they will probably find a middle ground, because the way it sort of, I saw the breakdowns, and again, I'm not an expert in how all of this works, but the breakdowns were such that it's just exponentially harder for you know, your regular grinder to get to where the Platinum Pros are getting in. And I think that there is the Platinum Pros can get in. They could get free invites to the step right before what they are getting. So they're still getting an incentive to do it, and it's still a big benefit to being Platinum, obviously. But at the same time, it's not quite the leg up, and maybe we'll get there eventually. But I like that it seems like.
What's their rationale for doing this? Is this to have bigger name pros at these events?
Well, they want, yeah, I think that.
But like, not have the pros have to spend half their time grinding stupid Magic Online if they don't want to?
Essentially.
Yeah, I mean, if somebody's a Platinum Pro, they put a lot of time into Magic. And
I think, you know, just extend it out to people that grind Magic Online has the opportunity to attend more. Premier. I don't know how that would work out, though. I mean, with the Pro Tour, you can only give so many invites. So, right. I mean, I guess. I mean, how it plays out. And I think, you know, it was whatever. And I think people are over complaining because obviously people are going to complain about everything in Magic. And I think people were just, is this auto reaction? So we'll see.
Well, I mean, some people that play Moto are going to get bubbled out by non-Moto players. So I could see that.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense for them to be upset, but that doesn't mean that what WotC is doing is the wrong thing, you know? It can both hurt some players while benefiting the game. Things like that happen all the time, and there's nothing wrong with it. But it doesn't mean that there's not a middle ground, and that's what I was going to say. I like that they seem like they've been very open to feedback. Obviously, we've had a lot of complaints about Magic Online in the past, even from within this cast, but it seems like maybe over the past 6 months, they've been very, very receptive to changes that people want, whether the changes within leagues or, and they've come out and said that they're listening to feedback about the MOX changes
and make adjustments
in the future.
I'm not buying that one, but
we don't think they're going to give. I guarantee. I'm very confident.
They'll fix the MOX. MOX is easy to fix, but as far as feedback is changing features on Magic Online, I don't see that happening really.
Right. Well, I'm talking the tournament stuff, not the technical stuff. The technical stuff is its own beast, you know.
True. All right. Yeah, I get you. Yeah, they are working, and the tournament structure has been getting better since the Brian Kibler fiasco, and
was the announcement they made too, that technically Magic Online is eating up many fewer resources
than it used to. Remember when the new client came out, it was just, I guess, extraordinarily difficult to stream it with a lot of computers. And they have said that they've made the technical side of it, at least in that sense, the drain on your computer a little better. So
yeah, but people that stop streaming Moto to start streaming Hearthstone aren't going to come back.
Yeah, but
it's too late.
That ship.
Oh, they will. They will.
Doesn't mean you don't do anything.
Can't give up Magic on Hearthstone. I mean, is only so deep. You know, you can't beat Magic. If you create a good Magic program, everyone will come back.
Yeah, and even just incrementally improve it. But anyway, so yeah, it's just a lot going on with Magic Online right now. And for once, there's actually some positive associated with it.
They did have a survey. I got to take the survey, and there's several questions about Hearthstone. So Hearthstone. I cannot say the name right for the death of me.
Hearthstream.
But yeah, so before they said it's not a competitor, and now they're seeing that it is a competitor. And that's good. At least they're awake to the situation, or maybe they got forced awake, but one way or the other, it's on their radar, and that could only be good for Magic.
Oh, they knew.
Well, they were.
They knew it was a competitor. Like, whether or not they acknowledged it in investor meetings, that's different. You know, I think they wanted to downplay just how screwed they thought they were, you know, for the investors. But they knew that Hearthstone was a game changer. Because even, you know, some of their top Magic streamers were way more excited about Hearthstone being a thing than they were about, like, the update to the new client. So I think they always knew. I don't know. I think they at least devised a strategy about what they were going to do to make Moto more acceptable and, like, actually a competing product. Because I feel like people can play both. That's not an issue. Hearthstone's kind of something you sit down and you're like, I just want to play for half an hour, and then you can do that. You can't really do that with Magic. But at the same time, Hearthstone doesn't have the complexity, you know, for when you really want to play your favorite game. Hearthstone doesn't have to be people's favorite game to play it. So I think they know. I think they knew all along and just couldn't acknowledge it. But hopefully they know what they need to do to fix Moto. And, they start throwing the resources at it that it needs.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense in your investor call to be like, we know that Hearthstone is a really good game and people love it and they like it more than Magic Online. There's no way you'd get that kind of free press. You talk about your own product, and like that particular thing that everyone cites was a question specifically asked. Somebody said, how do you see Hearthstone, blah, 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 and he said, gave the PR answer. It's not a competitor. We're just focused on improving our own product, blah, blah, blah. And that's what people are taking from it. Like, it was one person, the CEO or somebody in the C-suite of Hasbro answering that question, not anybody remotely related to Magic, you know.
And in a way, Hearthstone isn't a competitor because it's not – like, Magic Online is an offering within that marketplace, but that's the only space that Hearthstone takes up. And where Magic knows it's successful, Hearthstone doesn't touch. So in a way, it's not really a competitor.
Correct.
That's kind of like if there were no Magic Online, them asking, is Hearthstone a competitor to Duels of the Planeswalkers? And, I mean, not really.
No, yeah. Duels needs to... I talked about this on Heavy Meta. You guys should listen to it. I had a good conversation. But I just think that Duels is wrongly suited. It should not replicate Magic or playing Magic in the paper form. That's what Magic Online is for. And I think Magic Duels should separate into a digital-only game and explore space with digital-only like mechanics and such.
Oh, interesting. Because they have sort of simplified it, right? The game is not... In Magic Online, everything that can happen in paper can happen on Magic Online, and like all cards work. Duels is already a simplified version where the rules are different and there's not priority passes all the time. And
yeah, and it's this archaic gameplay and is very bad suited for a digital product. And you're cannibalizing Magic Online versus Duels. Both are trying to suit the same market, and you're trying to. So I think that by separating into a different product, it's a much stronger way, and you get people into Magic through that, you know.
They're never going to have people be super excited about duels. It's a great way to teach people to play the game, and it's a great way to fart around on your console a little bit. But don't try to make it something it's not.
I actually think Marcel's idea has more merit than that, but I understand what you're saying. It is a different market than Magic Online, though. I don't think they're cannibalizing anything there, because Magic is just simply too complicated a game for someone who sees it on Twitch to go download Magic Online and play and understand what's going on. Like, that just, it just won't ever work. The game itself is too complex. But Duels is the place they can go to learn. So I'm not convinced that those markets are really overlapping.
Yeah, maybe not cannibalized, but they definitely segment it or fragment it. You know, it's definitely like they're both products essentially are serving the same goal. And
it's kind of,
they're different markets, but they're providing the same service. If you think about it in the scheme, they're providing a digital way to play Magic in its paper form.
Yeah, but that's
you have to buy into one ecosystem or the other, because if you're going to spend all this money building up your Magic, you know, duels deck, and you got all these cards collection there, and you can't transfer to Magic Online, you'll never move over to Magic Online. Same thing with Magic Online. You got your collection on Magic Online, you're not going to transfer over to duels. So it creates this fragmented market for essentially the same thing. What you're trying to do is create a digital product. So I went to it a lot deeper there. I'm a heavy meta. So
yeah, I mean, I would.
Why even have a collection? It used to be like you played enough till you unlock cards that were already within the game, and then you could put those in your deck, and like that was it.
They changed it. They started.
And why bother?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's fair to say, like, the only similarity they have is that they're both digital, but they're both striving to accomplish different goals for different markets.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of things that do different things, even though they're both digital. Like, I don't think that's like Magic, like Duels of the Planeswalkers is for new players. And I think the progression they want is for people to go from Duels of the Planeswalkers to paper Magic. Magic Online serves people who are already hardcore about Magic. And like, I don't think that the jump is ever meant to be Duels of the Planeswalkers into Magic Online, because if you don't have someone teaching you how to play, you just can't make that jump, because Magic's too complex of a game. And Magic Online, of course, makes it even worse. Things that are easy in paper are hard on Magic Online. So I think that the progression is supposed to be, oh, you're interested in Magic, you saw it on Twitch, download Duels of the Planeswalkers. It's a really easy way to learn by yourself how to play. And then they see you go into paper after that.
I mean, that makes sense. And I do like duels as teaching someone to play Magic. I think it's the best way you could teach anybody to play Magic, because it allows them to learn on their own pace and, you know, lose and make mistakes on their own pace without people, you know, judging them. So I think by that, that's the best thing of it. But as far as like a digital game, I think duels is lacking in there. There's numerous reasons for like just the timing and the pace of speed that the game plays out. It's excruciatingly just like slow, especially when you play something like Hearthstone or Hearthstream or whatever the hell. But I just think that it's okay. It's an okay game. It's serviceable. But I think if they were to change it into a digital only game and then go after and attack Hearthstone on that, you know, access, I think they would have an excellent game.
That would certainly be interesting. Yeah. You could have a team of a couple people, probably only. It's all you would need to dedicate to just sort of exploring things there.
Mm-hmm. And just being able to open up that, you know, that creative space, what it could translate maybe to paper Magic would be interesting. I'm sure you could get ideas from there that would bloom from there that they would never come up with in a paper realm that could be applicable. So,
all right. Do we want to let's do some picks of the week before we close out here.
Pick of the week, pick of the week, pick of the week. Time for the pick of the week.
I'll go ahead and knock mine out, since, you know, I just sprung it on you guys. But I actually think Expeditions have bottomed out and now's the time to pick them up. We've seen, from what I understand, a couple of them start to move up a little on Magic Online. And in paper, we've seen some of the highest demand ones, you know, your blue fetch lands sort of also start to come off their lows. And at the very least, they're certainly not dropping anymore. So this is your very, I mean, these are long term. They're not going to explode. They're not going to be a lot more expensive a month from now than they are now, but they are, I think, going to be at historic lows. The only sort of mitigating factor to that, will be when Zendikar Fetchlands do get reprinted, if Scalding Tarn and Mystic Rainforest take a hit at that time or not. That's sort of the only open question. But when it comes to your shock lands and those other fetch lands, I think the expeditions are bottomed out at this point, and now's the time to pick them up if you ever see yourself wanting them.
Yeah, that's.
I completely agree with you on that one. Yeah, like this weekend, me and Thomas were kind of talking about it, and he came up with a good explanation. Zendikar expeditions are they're just the perfect kind of replacement, not necessarily for Judge Foils, but at these major events, they kind of act like Judge Foils, where it's like you have these people who are either bringing them up and instantly selling them the moment they open them, or you're the people who want them all, and they move through so quickly, and they're so liquid because you can always get more because there's always those players that are opening them constantly and just don't want them. And they're not such a high price point that people are afraid to go get their place out of them. But it's, I don't know, it almost feels like a quest to, you know, get your 40 if you want them, or however many are going to be out there finally at the finish. And it seems like a lot more people are interested in these than a lot of the other higher price stuff. They're right in that perfect range. And so now is a great time to get on them, because every single one we bought in, I think outside of like three, we probably sold. And I'm pretty sure we went through over 100 on the weekend.
Damn.
Two.
Over 100.
What's your pick of the week, Ryan?
Let's see. What do I want to go with this week? I think that you probably want to be in on, and this is going to be a strange one, Dragonlord Ojutai. I think that that card is going to pick back up. I think that, you know, seeing Esper Dragons do well is great. The Crackling Doom numbers are down. Nobody's really playing around Ojutai right now. And it's not that you're going to see Ojutai have this huge spike, but it's going to be a really easy card to move back out of because people aren't going to question the price pretty much no matter how high it goes. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, we have over a full year now that this card is still going to be in standard, which means even if it's not, like, you don't see huge gains on it now, I think after this cons rotates out, Ojutai gets even better. Because you lose Crackling Doom as the answer to it, right? So
that makes sense. And Ojutai is quite the card. Is it at what price is it right now? Sorry, I didn't hear.
On Moto, they've already gone up from about 16 to 20. And I think we're going to see even more growth on that. And paper, I'm not as big on because just the margins are a little harder. But, and this might not be something you want to go pick up a bunch of copies to make money on, but I think at the very least, if you don't have your playset, now is a fine time. Even at 20, like, the card is just so good, and it's going to continue to be so good. And there's always going to be some sort of Dragon's deck to be able to play this in. So I'm huge on that card right now.
My pick of the week is always a card I don't think people should go run out and buy copies to make money on.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I'm at with things too. Right now, especially when we've talked about this past couple weeks, Corbin's mentioned it multiple times. Standard's not really the place where you're gonna go drop money into something. Like we know what the metagame is right now. We haven't seen any huge surprises. Like there's some different builds, but most of them are coming from existing archetypes. And so we're not going to see any of these, you know, buy something for 50 cents or a dollar and see it hit 10. Like, we already got our hanger back of the season. That's not going to happen. So really, if you want to put your money into somewhere, it's kind of, you want to look for these cards that, A, are going to survive this next rotation, but are also seeing an ample amount of play right now. And I think Ojutai is a prime target for that.
All right. The thesis that I've been working with in my articles on MTG price lately, since all the commander cards are spoiled, is that there are going to be cards that rebound pretty well, and it might take a year or two, but you know, the price of stuff, you look at it and it rebounds and gets even higher than it was before the reprint, or you know, it gets up to where it was and everyone's like, wow, this card got all the way down to $1.50 before it went up to, you know, $6. How did I not see that coming? And I think it's pretty obvious that there's going to be some cards that, you know, the price goes down even farther than it should just because they were decided arbitrarily. Like Star City, as arbitrary as they were on the stuff that is new, they were just as arbitrary on the stuff that was getting reprinted. Like they're like, we think stuff's going to go down this much. Like Cyclonic Rift. Cyclonic Rift was like an $8 to $10 card, and then it hit $1.50. When it got reprinted in Commander 2014, it's back up to $5-6 now because it's goddamn Cyclonic Rift. And also, the blue deck it's in is terrible. Nobody wants it, you know? So as much as Cyclonic Rift has got to soak up some of the value of that deck just to get to MSRP for that deck. You know, they're not really selling all that well. It's one of the decks that just like the value in the deck doesn't even add up to MSRP. It's not even worth buying. So, you know, even with Cyclonic Rift, you know, hovering at five, you know, between $4 and $5, you're still not getting the value there. So they didn't anticipate the blue deck being that bad and, you know, a key reprint having to soak up a lot of that value. So I'm looking at the worst deck this time around, and the worst deck is clearly the Boros one. Boros one's just trash. And we have a card called Gisela, Blade of Gold Knight, that's down to $3.50, down from like $9-$10. And $3.50 is non-correct for a ridiculous, ridiculous, unfair, legendary angel that puts you in Boros. Like, this card's stupid. And the fact that it's $3.50 is nuts because it's going to go right back up to $10 in a year or two. So I think this is a card that has overcorrected. And I think once they realize how little of value there is in the Boros deck, there's Gisela, there's Urza's Incubator, there's Lightning Greaves, and then like the next most expensive card is Taurian Mauler, you know. So the Blade of Selves is going to soak up a lot of value. But I still think Giselle is going to rebound. Absolutely. Because I think Fiery Confluence and Anya are gonna go down. I think Fiery Confluence is going to be bulk. And I think Anya might stay at a couple bucks. So that's a lot of value to make up. And I think Giselle is equal to the task. Urza's Incubator is obviously a key reprint in there also. But, you know, that's just going to hover around $5. And it hasn't got cheap enough to buy in. But God, Gisela at $3.50 is ridiculous. So I'm absolutely all about buying all the Giselas you can get. If people happen to open the Kalemna deck, maybe to get the Blade of Selves out. I don't know why they would do it, not to play with it. But yeah, Gisela at $3.50 is non-correct, and I think it's this set Cyclonic Rift for sure.
That sounds very, very good. I like that pick. It's probably my favorite one of the week.
Yeah, I'm Marcel's favorite.
Unts. All right.
Ever since I started writing about EDH, like I realize like just how much prices move, but nobody's really paying attention, and how people could really just save a lot of money just by paying attention a tiny little bit. Because there are people that are like, shit, E-Witness is back up to $8. It was like $4. A little while ago. I should have bought them when they're... Yeah, absolutely. And if, you know, people spend a little bit of time thinking about it, they can save themselves a lot of money in the long run.
Yep. Or they could not pay attention and just listen to this podcast, and then you can help them pay a little bit of attention. So,
yeah.
Tune in.
Yeah! And they'll take my word for it. And then I'm the only one talking about EDH finance. And then I corner the market on EDH singles because I'm the only voice of reason in the marketplace. And then I rule the world.
Well, you can't corner the market. I was listening to this podcast on Planet Money talking about a guy that actually cornered the market on onions. And he literally cornered the market. And it's probably not plausible in this day and age anymore. But anyway, my pick of the week is going to be, I'm trying to decide.
Onions?
Onions, yes. You need to get the onions. Red onions are best because they work well raw. And if you want to cook them down, you want to get some yellow onions. Because them grilled onions, they're far superior to anything else you could put on there besides red onions. So your burger depends. It really depends and hinges on what you're looking for and what your other ingredients are. But you should add either red onions if you're doing it raw or grilled onions. If you're not. But I'm going to go with Pia and Kieran Nalar.
On Moto?
In paper, too. It's a dollar in paper. It's 50
it's
cents.
It's a dollar in paper because it's in the intro pack.
Oh.
It's an intro pack rare.
Well, all right. Cancel that then. All right. Let's go with Kithian then. Kithian's like, let's see. He is $6 in paper, $5, and he's $3 online. Is he going to do something? That's the big question. I was coming in, thought Kithian was definitely one of the leading planeswalkers, and he just got eclipsed by Jace. Is there hope for Kithian? Is there going to be an aggro deck that can actually make a, a 2-1 for one viable? I don't know. That's a very hard choice. We've been having a lot of good, you know, cheap creatures. Savannah Lions has been outclassed in this current Magic. And will it ever regain its foothold? I don't know. But if it does, I can see Kithian being part of that deck. $3, $6 on paper. I don't know if there's going to be a high upside, but you may double. But it's a long shot. I don't know. I'm going to start playing some more Magic, so I'll have more opinion and better picks of the week coming up from standard applications coming up next week. But I'll go with that on Kithian.
You could do worse than a Savannah Lions with upside, I think.
Yeah, but I mean,
well, if it does get bought, it's getting bought as a 4-of.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's a powerful card. It just, you know, it just needs the deck and it just needs the format. And I don't know if we're going to have.
Well, and I mean, on Moto, if Zergo can be a 4-ticket rare or 5-ticket rare, then this card can certainly be worth something. So I like that. There's a lot of upside there. And it doesn't take much to get there. The only problem is, I feel like if there's going to be an aggro deck in those colors, it's probably going to be pushing the ally theme.
Mm.
So if you're pushing the ally theme, it makes it a little harder to play him, right? Because he's not an ally, just a new one, I think. And you also can't really play him in other Gideon decks, which is a little awkward.
Yeah, and if you're going to play the allies, you may want the other Gideon. I would probably go for the other Gideon way over. The synergies is high. But yeah, speaking of that Gideon is such a house. It was clear. It was a clear front runner, and it remained the front runner we talked about. We should probably do a review next week and talk about our set review or something. Go over
something. That sounds boring. We should have a guest, or we should talk about our peepees.
I'm in for a guest. I'm in for whatever. Let's do it. Let's make it happen. Brainstorm Brewery. It's all about whatever the fuck we want to do.
Yeah. Fucking doing stuff.
Tune in next week for some more of this and hopefully some more of that. And a lot more interest in Magic. So it's all.
A little bit of this and a little bit of that.
We can be found on GatheringMagic.com and BrainstormBrewery.com. Brainstorm Brewery is sponsored by MTGPrice.com. Track your whole collection and its value for free at MTGPrice.com.